Hey, everybody, welcome back to Little Things or Big Things Education Podcast with T-Free and K-Dub. We are here with you in Motivation Week, and we're kickstarting you with one of our connection activities with you, helping you motivate the unmotivated. K-Dub's going to get us with a student intervention plan, and we're excited to hear from you, so let's get to it.
Roll. So this week's connection activity is less of one of those things where we are talking about connecting with students, which has been kind of the focus of our connection time, and really thinking about how we are using student intervention meetings. I would imagine that all or most of you out there who are teachers, and many of you who maybe have students in the school system, have been to one of these meetings or participated in one of these meetings, right? We use these terminology like tier one, tier two, tier three kids, multi-tiered systems of support, all that language that is becoming, I think, fairly common. I think I've heard you talk about like tier one, tier two, and tier three, right, Tim?
I mean, I'm going to tell you it's because I just mimicked the words I heard you say.
Okay, fair enough. So this is like specifically something that we are trying to do better at our school. We have these ninth grade student success teams, where I think I've mentioned this before. We have our ninth grade students in these different communities where they share the same social studies, physics, and English teacher. Their core classes couldn't do math because I think I've said this before as well in the podcast. Math is the only subject in our state anyways that's actually being done based on the proficiency model, where, hey, you're good at geometry, you can move on to algebra now. So we can't, we got kids in different grades at different points with the math. So in those communities, we are working around looking at data for our students and having meetings, particularly with our individual students who are, you know, failing more than one class, having attendance issues, if we have a, you know, examples of behavior issues coming up, and talking about how can we support that student and get them to a point of success, right? And so in these meetings, there's a tendency to do like the first step is nice. Like, I think and I would be willing to bet that anybody who's done a meeting like this has started with, tell me what your strengths are, Jimmy or Julia, or, you know, tell me what it is about school that you feel successful with, right? You always start with that. And then it's just a laundry list of, well, here's all the things that you're messing up on, and how can we fix this, or how can you fix this? And so I was talking with one of the success team leaders at a different high school that is having, I'll use the word success again, they're having more success with like actually creating movement for their students, right? Like motivating their kids to be more successful. And where they're coming from with that is, number one, starting with thinking about the student in a very different way, and really putting the onus on the teacher. And what I mean by that is, their first question before they even meet with the student for each teacher is to think about things that you are doing and the way that you are operating your classroom that could be a barrier for the student. Like, so like really focusing on you as a teacher, and what might I be doing that is making it so that this student is not having the kind of success that I want them to have in my class, right? And really having that framework around it. And then once you start to meet with the student, there's a huge shift from listing the barriers that that student is facing rather than listing your concerns, right? And so some examples that this teacher gave me of kinds of questions they ask versus some of the questions we'll ask is like, hey, we're really concerned about your attendance, and kind of, and the way they would reframe a very similar thought process, but really changes how that conversation both kind of gets followed through on, and how the student hears that conversation is thinking about, hey, we're noticing that you're not showing up to class at a level that would be help you be more successful. What are some things that are stopping you from being able to come to class on a regular basis, right? So instead of putting the onus on, hey, we think this is a problem, just saying, hey, we're noticing this, what's stopping you from doing it more? And so trying to eliminate that deficit mindset where we're assuming that there's something wrong with this student, is something that we're going to be shifting our focus on as we go, get into quarter four for our ninth graders after meeting with this teacher from the other school. And then the other thing that they really talked about and that when our team met that we thought was going to be really helpful for us is really trying to remember that, like, there are many stories and it is part of like the American ethos and mythology, like that idea of like they doubted me and I overcame their doubts, or their doubts fueled me to like be a rock star. And we hear those stories, they get highlighted all the time in our culture, in our society. What we very rarely ever give voice to or pay attention to is that, like, those are anecdotal evidence, pieces of evidence. And we know that there are probably as many, if not more, examples of students who have been told that they can't, or who have been doubted, or have been given reason to believe that they cannot be successful, and that becoming their destiny, right? Like, that becomes that self-fulfilling prophecy. And, you know, you and I are big believers in like self-talk and the language that we use to talk about things. So this made a direct connection to me of like, this makes total sense that we not expect students to say, oh, this person doubted me, so I'm going to overcome that and prove them wrong by getting A's, right? That's not going to work for all students. It might work for some, but relying on that strategy is not going to be very successful for a lot of our students.
I mean, it's because we love the hero story, right? of course, we're going to highlight the, hey, remember that one time I was a complete jerk to the student and they just overcame me and became like the greatest student ever? Like, I need to be a jerk to all my students because it will make them stronger, right? Or this was one of the things I hated as a coach too, right? Like the jerk coach that just rips students apart. Like, I got to tear them down to build them up, like old school military style, basically. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, one, we are not relying on each other, life and death situations. There's a completely different psychology that goes behind that whole process. Two, you weren't trained in that. Maybe you got treated that way, but you are not a professional in that element. Cool. Knock that crap off. It's not effective. And there's a lot of evidence to the contrary, like you're speaking to. Like, no, like, there's a lot more stories that are like, hey, so-and-so doesn't think I can do this, so I'm just not going to do it. Right? Like, I'm going to live up to the expectation. I would argue to say that, especially you and I, in all of our experiences, both academic and athletic, way more experiences where if we set the bar high for kids and say, this is what I think you're capable of, they will get to that bar. Mm-hmm. Versus if we set the bar low, they will reach the low bar. And so I know you and I have worked on that for sure. And I think that's fairly universal. So yeah, 100%. And I love the reframing of that question of like, why, like, this is something that we've noticed, and how can we help you become more proficient or overcome mm-hmm. this hurdle versus mm-hmm. like, yo, like, you're not coming to class. Like, yeah, I know I'm not coming to class. Why aren't you coming to class? Because I don't want to come to class. What could help you come to class more frequently? What would help us allow you to show up more frequently, or what's preventing it? Like, I think was your phrasing. I love that. And they're like, oh, well, I mean, I guess if I, you know, woke up on time, I could be at class more frequently. Okay, great. How can we help you wake up on time more frequently? I mean, I snooze alarm or whatever, right? Like, you actually get to what the actual root is. Like, the root maybe is that they don't like your class, right? And so they're more frequent to smash the snooze button. But like, the issue is I'm hitting the snooze button. So how do we mm-hmm. overcome the snooze button so you can show up in my class? And if you show up in my class more frequently, you get more success. You get more success. You get more confidence. You get more confidence. You succeed. And now you just want to be here. Like, it was all because of the snooze button. But we don't know that because we're concerned about you just didn't show up.
Well, I think the other thing that goes with that that you're highlighting is, you know, we tend to make a lot of assumptions, and whether we mean to or not, a lot of those are racially based. Like, we had a teacher in our group who did a really good job of calling themselves out and just like saying, like, I kind of assume that when a Hispanic student is struggling with attendance, it's because they have to take care of family, like younger siblings at home, because that's like something that's in the popular understanding of like how Latinx culture is different than American culture when it comes to families and who's responsible, and just also the work situation, right? Like, those families don't have jobs where they can call in sick and all those kinds of things, right? So, but when you make that assumption, you start offering solutions that might not have anything to do with what the student's actual problem is, right? And so that was the other part of that that I really liked. But I also want to touch on something else that you said that I thought was really insightful. You talked about like that idea of the hero.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing that was really powerful about what they were doing at this other school that was allowing them to really move the needle for their students with these student success teams is that they're also taking away the narrative of them as individual heroes to save these kids, right? It wasn't about like, what can I do to make it so that this kid can be a rock star, right? Or so that this kid can achieve their potential. They have really developed a sense of community and collaboration, which are things that we've talked about in some of our previous podcasts, where like they're making sacrifices. One of the things they talked about is all of the world history teachers at that school use the same slides on the same days. And they use the same assessments on the same days. So are people sacrificing some of that individualism, some of that independence that a lot of teachers hold near and dear? That was like a thing when they told me that. I was like, I don't know if I'm going to do that. But then when she explained the why, she's like, think about how many more scaffolds you can offer a student if the only thing you're responsible for preparing for a unit is making sure all the readings are leveled.
Right.
That's your only job. You don't have to write the slides. You don't have to grade every test. You don't have to write the test, right? Like there's so many things that you can take off your plate if you're sharing the workload, and you can share the workload better if you're collaborating on the day-to-day things that we are doing. And that was actually one of the things that we haven't really talked about it a whole lot yet, but again, changing that hero story, both for the individual student of like succeeding despite the negative treatment or the, in some cases, you know, you and I could, we won't name names, right? But we could point to some coaches that we grew up with that were like legitimately abusive from a verbal standpoint.
Verbally borderline physical.
Yeah. And then like also taking the hero label off of ourselves, like removing that burden of like, I have to be the person that saves this kid, which is really freeing in multiple ways for ourselves as teachers, because I think we set ourselves up for failure too if we feel like we have to rescue every single kid by ourselves because we can't trust anybody else to do things the right way.
Right. And as you were speaking of that, it actually kind of made me think a little bit about the surviving and thriving needs episode we did, where one of those, right, was that uniqueness where like one of the human needs that we all have to just survive is we need to be unique. We need to be special, right? And what I have noticed is when that becomes our number one driver, it's no longer about the student, right? It's about me. And when it becomes about me, it's not always about what's best for the student. Because I'm trying to satisfy my need to feel important, and I'm special because I'm fixing you, or I'm saving you, I'm rescuing you, I'm the hero, right? And now I feel important, versus if we shift to that next one, right? The fourth one we talked about was that idea of oneness or connection, right? Where we actually connect. And that's the whole purpose of this, right? And so if we can get away from ourself, out of our own self, and into the connection piece, we can be in a way better space to serve others. And then, you know, that gets into that thriving where we actually go to the next level and we're growing, we're helping teach, and we're contributing, we're giving back in a way that satisfies and fills the student's need, right? So, no, I love that you brought that up. It can become, get away from the teacher being the hero and let the students pick themselves up a little bit, rescue themselves, whatever, like rewrite their story where they're no longer at the bottom of the pile, but they're very capable and they're empowered.
Yeah. And I like that you use the word empowered to kind of circle back to our primary topic for this week. Like the reason I thought that these conversations around the language that we use when we're meeting with a student, like even that term intervention is like borderline. Is that really something that we want to like, right? Cause now we're getting semantic, but I also think like I'm a big word person. Like I think words really have meaning. I get frustrated when people use like revolution when they mean independence and things like that. Those are things that I get caught up on with my students and whatnot. But that thought process of let's create a space where the students know that the tools are there for them to pick up when they're ready, right? Like all the scaffolds are in place. We've worked together as a staff. We've checked in with you. We've tried to figure out what are some other barriers that are maybe unique to you that we can support you with. But then what ultimately happens is the community is there to help you when you want the help, right? But ultimately they have to make that choice. And I think recognizing that balance between the individual elements of that part of the work versus the community being there to support that work is something that I'm still trying to figure out how to balance, and B, figure out how to manifest in a classroom. But I think changing the language that we use is a nice place to start.
I 100% agree. Yeah. Language is big for sure. So no, I like it. I think those are great ideas. And yeah, even down to the intervention, just how do we step in and identify the barriers that we're creating, and how do we help the student overcome whatever barrier it is, something we created or something the system has created or something outside our control, right? And so I love that. So appreciate the connection activity and connecting those. Any final thoughts?
No, I think we're good. I'm looking forward to our episode for Thursday.
It's going to be great. All right, we'll see you all on Thursday.
Hey there, people.